guests or consumers, they will pay more if you give them a reason to pay more. But that's what's really important. Hosts are not doing a good job giving them a reason to pay more. You have to differentiate yourself. You have to be personalized. You have to be unique and different. And that gives the consumer justification to pay more. All these things are saying, hey, consumers want to pay more. They're willing to pay more. Here's what they want. It's our job to give it to them. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast, Whiskey Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
I'm
yes,
your host, Sean Moore, Jake Sheehy.
How you doing?
My co-host. How we doing, buddy?
Man, great day to be live. Feeling amazing.
Feeling good today.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We've got tons of stuff on the agenda.
All right.
Really good stuff, exciting stuff, educational stuff. So I'm excited to share.
Good. Yeah, this is a big week with a lot of things going on. So I was just peeking at the agenda. It's some big things going on. What do we got today?
Okay, we're starting off with a trending topic. We're going with the government shutdown. Just really quick, just touching on that, but not the main thing. Then we're going to go into some short-term rental stuff. We're talking about Airbnb. They just came out with this new 15%, what that means for property managers and hosts and all that kind of thing. We're going to talk about that. Then we're going into this question, this educational piece, this big portion. Should you buy a pre-existing short-term rental or should you start from scratch? We're going to go through all of that. Then we're going to end on a pretty exciting note, but something that everybody needs to hear. This is some huge news. Some really great stuff came out that looking at the longevity of vacation homes, what that means, and really some great articles. We're going to dive into that.
Awesome.
First topic is the trending one. We got government shutdown. We're in the fourth week. You know, 1.4 million are going to go without pay, apparently. 42 million, I just saw, are on the SNAP, SNAP benefits. So a lot of people are asking, you know, I haven't personally been affected by this, so a lot of people are going, do we even really need them? You know, should they just keep being shut down? Or, you know, I guess it is kind of irritating, especially when you read stuff like some of these people out of the 1.4 million, apparently they're furloughed, but the other half are considered essential. So they're continuing to work, but come November 1st, they may not get pay. And that's a huge deal for some people in the working class, you know.
Well, you've got, it's a big deal. This is going to be a big week to see what happens. You've got both sides pointing fingers at each other. I'm not going to get into
the political
aspects of it. I think it's ridiculous. I do think that, just factually, whoever is the opposing party is who's shutting down the government. So right now the Dems are holding the shutdown as a negotiating tool to extend some of the Obamacare stuff that was put into place that's set to expire this year. Not, in my opinion, the time and place to do it. Everybody's going to have their own opinion on that and to each their own. I think that it's going to be really interesting. To my knowledge, I don't think ever in history has it happened where the food stamps program or the welfare type program, food assistance program, has ever been not funded. And where people are going, I mean, that's the bigger deal. It's not that, 1.4 million people without pay that are government employees. Like we've said, it hasn't really affected us. I was saying from the very beginning, I think that the TSA and air traffic control should walk out and it will affect everybody.
And
a lot of people will be pissed. Start to call those congressmen and senators and saying, get your shit together.
I know.
I mean, I think that at the end of the day, it's really, really frustrating that they can't figure out how to deal with this kind of stuff.
I mean,
it just seems like such a game, and they don't care about the American people. And I just feel like that it's a game. But 40 million people, 42 million people, I think, on November 1st, which is going to be Saturday, right? Is that Saturday?
That is Saturday.
Is their food programs expire. That's 12% of the U.S. population. You know, we got 340 million people, and you got 42 million people. 12% of the U.S. population is one. That's a problem. So we have 12% of our population relying on the government for their food.
Right.
So
true.
I mean,
well, that's a good point.
I don't know that you know, that that a lot of the people that are that are there, I'm probably preaching to the choir of our listeners, that they're not in that situation. But that's why we always say, listen, nobody's coming to save you. And, you know, you've got to be self-reliant, and you've got to be, you know, you've got to figure out how to take care of your own house and how to figure all this stuff out. 12% of the U.S. population, in my opinion, should not be on food assistance. You know, those programs are there to help those in need. 100% agree with them to be able to help people in need. But we've become... there is a huge portion of that 12% that it's like generational people on it, right? You're on it for a long time, and you know, and so not to again get into the do's or don'ts or the rights or wrongs of that, but I, you know, it's a stark reminder that even even the U.S. government is, you know, isn't going to be saving you if they can't get their shit together in Washington. So I think that again, I mean, at a more macro level, or in your own house, micro level, saying, hey, listen, what am I doing to make sure that I'm not relying on anybody else for those things? Because it is pretty sad that you have 42 million people that are that are going to be wondering, hey, how am I going to pay for my food? You know,
that's scary.
You know, and it's, I also think it's sad that there's that many people on it. I mean, we live in, we live in the greatest country in on the planet, in my opinion. And there's a lot of opportunity, and I feel like that that there's we've you know, we've talked about the victim role that became very, very popular. I think it's kind of rolling out of that. The popularity of the victim role is not as popular as it used to be a couple of years ago. But also, you know, that victim role also, you know, buys into the fact that somebody else should be taking care of me. Somebody else should be paying for something. Somebody else, you know, it's not my fault. I'm in this situation.
So scary.
And you know, again, most of us are not the listeners ourselves. Unfortunately, we're not in the situation of having to deal with this. It's pretty sad. And when you have 42 million people that aren't getting food, some of your major metro areas that are a little bit higher populations of those, you know, people in those situations. I mean, you could see, you know, it could be a little bit of a little bit of a chaotic Saturday, I think.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Like, does that now start with like looting and rioting? Do people now take to the streets and go like, I need to feed my family, man. You guys need to figure this out.
I'm guessing. So that's, I don't know. I don't know. You know,
we'll see.
It's kind of sad. We'll see. I don't, is it going to happen right on the first when they, I mean, when they miss that first check, or is it when that card doesn't get, I know it's not check. It's a, what a card gets
when you swipe and it don't work.
It gets reloaded every month. I'm not sure how that all works, but I think that's how it is. And
do you think they'll figure it out by the first? You think they're just, they're playing this long game, seeing who's going to budge first, almost like playing chicken. You know, they're saying you're not going to, they're not going to,
well, that's what they're both doing. They're both playing chicken.
Right.
And you know, and I don't know that, I don't know.
It's a tough
one. If you went this long, why? I mean, it almost feels like it's going to go for a while. Like they're going to get to the point where, you know, they're going to keep going to see who cracks first. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know.
But that's crappy for the American who needs this.
Yeah. Those 42 million people that, you know, you're just a pawn in a chess game.
Yeah.
That these elites in Washington are playing, and they don't care about you. So
it's so sad. Yeah. All right. That's enough of this down, you know, this sad stuff. Let's get some
fun. Let's talk about stuff we actually know a little bit about too.
Let's go into this. Okay. So Airbnb today, the 27th, this Monday, we're recording this. This is what comes out. This says October the 27th, most hosts who use property management software will automatically transition to a single fee structure. This is right off the Airbnb.com newsroom website. And then it goes into this. I'm kind of alley-ooping this to you right here.
Yeah. So this is, I mean, this is a big, big change, right? Okay. Airbnb continues to make policy changes, continues to make these fee changes. And they announced this a little while ago. We've talked about it a little bit on the podcast. We talked a little bit about, you know, a lot through our coaching program of strategies of what we're going to do. But today's the day. You know, we're recording this on Monday. It comes out on Wednesday, but it's today's the day where they're saying, hey, everybody's on this now.
Yeah.
And it's, if you're using a property management tool, blah, 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 it's most people are going to be affected by this, where there are no more guest fees. So instead of the guest having their, you know, your cleaning fee, your nightly rate, your taxes, and your Airbnb fee, Airbnb is saying, hey, listen, hey, host, you're paying all the fees now. So instead of the guest paying a 12.5% and you're paying 3.5% or whatever it was, you're now paying 15.5% and the guest pays nothing. What this does is it really affects your net, because you're ultimately, and you really need to break this down side by side. Okay. And it gets a little bit complicated when you run the math and trying to talk it through. But for $100 a night, it's not just as simple. I've said before, you know, simply stated, you need to raise your prices by 15.5%.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it really matters how your management, if you've got a management company, how they're charging, mm-hmm. are they charging on gross? Are they charging on net? Hmm. What the taxes are getting charged? Because the taxes are the big winners in this move mm-hmm. are Airbnb and the taxes, because the taxes charge, the hospitality lodging taxes charge usually normally off nightly rate plus cleaning fees. So if I'm charging $200 a night and $50 a, you know, it's, I know we don't charge nightly cleaning, but let's say it breaks down after they stay, it's $50 extra a night. Mm-hmm. And so I'm paying $250. I'm paying my 15.5% on that $250. I'm paying my, whatever my lodging taxes are, usually 12 to 16%, depending on the market you're in. Mm-hmm. And ultimately those two are making a really nice, you know, a really nice chunk on that additional thing, because what we did is we raised those prices. Now, if we raise our prices by 15% to cover that, they're getting that extra tax and that extra fee on the gross revenue amount. So they get a nice bump. For us, our net, depending on how our management company is charging us on gross or net, I always have my management companies paid off of my net instead of my gross. They could be big winners too, because you raise your rates. If I'm charging $200 a night and I raise it 15%, now I'm charging $230 a night and my management company is charging me 20%, all of a sudden in the first scenario, they made $40 a night and I made $160 a night.
Right.
In the second scenario, if they're charging me 20% on that, they're making, what is that, $44 a night. So they're making an extra, they're making that extra 20% off the extra $30. So they're making $46 a night.
Instead way to of go 40, on the math. Right? Time out. Way to so, go on the math right there. That was so good.
So they're gonna get an ups. So but what that does is now my net is 157 or it's 154 instead of 160, which ultimately, you know, that starts to add up when it's, you know, 3% here, 4% here. And so you need to talk to your management company about making sure that they're not winning and you're losing. Like work it out together. But if it's off the net, it doesn't matter. That's an example off the gross. Again, long story short is I've heard in a perfect world, and everybody's saying it, and everybody's saying, hey, listen, you need to be raising your prices. And it's usually going to be somewhere between that 15 to 18, maybe 20%, depending on how everything is structured, for you to net the same amount. And the guest is pretty much going to be close to even. Even if you raise it by 18 or 20%, they might be paying a couple bucks more a night. But it's not much. Airbnb's a winner. Taxes are a winner. What we're trying to do is keep it even for us and ultimately make it to where we're not getting hurt by being on Airbnb. The other option as well is you should be doing this just on Airbnb, right? You should be just raising your prices on Airbnb. So whatever your pricing tools that you're using, your software property management system, software tools, they can all do this. When you set your pricing, raise those rates on Airbnb only as a platform. As a platform fee, right? And so don't raise them across the board, because if you do it on Vrbo or Booking.com or these other platforms, all of a sudden your guest is paying way more on a platform that you may want to get a little more business on. And so here's the dilemma in the past that I've talked about. And there's a lot of people that are like, see, this is why you diversify on multiple platforms and everything else. True. Totally agree. There's definitely an argument to have some diversification and making sure that you were on multi channels and you were doing direct bookings. Now, we always do direct bookings as well, but I've always said one of the things that hosts are always trying to do is rank as high as possible, and they want to say, hey, how do we you know, get in favor with these algorithms on Airbnb or Vrbo. Well, I've said in the past, one of the best ways to do that is to focus on one of the platforms. You know, because if we do really good at optimizing on one, it's really hard to optimize on multiple. So you can be diversified but not optimized on Airbnb, Vrbo, Booking.com. In this scenario, that feels really good, because you've got other options. You're getting maybe 40 or 50% of your business somewhere else. In my situation, I was optimized on one platform. Most of my properties were optimized on Airbnb. So I'm not getting a lot of business from Vrbo because my focus was trying to optimize. I wanted to be ranked really high. We've got number one revenue properties in markets. We only do that by being able to be really focused and optimized to maximize our listing. That hurts us in these scenarios when we're not that diversified and we don't have an option to go back and say, well, now I want to be on Vrbo. I have to go relaunch and kind of start on Vrbo if I want to do that. So I realize that in these situations, that kind of hurts us. So we have to make sure that we make these adjustments pricing-wise. The jury's still out of how many people will make those adjustments pricing-wise because and I don't think it's going to be everybody's like, well, everybody's going to do it because nobody wants to make less money. That's a perfect world.
Yeah.
And that's easier said than done. I've also heard a lot of management companies suggesting to their owners now to say, well, maybe split the difference. Maybe only raise it by 7 or 8% instead of 15 to 20%. And I did the exact same thing. Why would they do that? Right. Yeah. Well, run the scenario down. They're probably getting paid on the gross. And so if that, host raises their prices by half, that management company is making the same amount. However, the host is making a hell of a lot less.
Wow.
So,
okay.
In my opinion, the advice is a little bit self-serving to say, well, listen, maybe we only have to go up half and not upset the apple cart too much. We're going to be priced really competitively. Wow. We still make the same amount of money. And those are probably, in my opinion, if you're getting that advice from your management partner, go look and see what your contract says and how you're paying your management partner. I bet you you're paying on the gross amount, not the net amount. And that management partner, by going up half, is probably putting the same amount in their pocket.
Wow.
So something to think about, something to look at. The change has happened. It's here. They gave you the option to do it for a while. We all chose to go proactively and do it.
Right.
We wanted to kind of do it proactively, get it in. So this change isn't hitting us today. We made that suggestion about a month and a half ago to say, why don't we go proactively do this, get ahead of the curve, and so that we're starting to optimize with that new pricing structure, paying those fees to Airbnb. And it's worked out okay. But we will see what happens with pricing. Now, a lot of people use price optimization tools as well. Another kind of asterisk to note is as those like Price Labs and stuff, what they're doing is they're going to start to say, suggest prices. And they're going to see if people start to raise their prices, they're going to suggest higher prices. So you may actually have to back it down a little bit because the price optimization tools are also suggesting a higher price. So you could be actually adding a little more than you need to if you start to, which is a good thing if you're keeping it booked. But if your bookings slow down, watch and see what the price optimization tools are doing as well, because they might already suggest a raised an increase in rate versus and on top of what you decided to do 15 or 18%.
Oh, wow.
So just watch it.
Yeah.
Right? Things to watch.
Okay. Two questions came about. Do you think this will be a time of exodus when it comes to property managers? People are just going to go, this is too much. I don't want to deal with all of this. And they're going to start to leave property managers?
No. I think that most people who use property managers, they use them for a reason. I mean, I use them for a reason.
Yeah.
I'm paying 20 or 30% off the top, right? Where they're taking 20 to 30% of my gross revenue, depending on the market I'm in. And we use them because we want to spend our time doing, like, our highest and best use of my time is not managing a property.
Right.
And so some people, they're in that situation. Their highest and best use of their time is not managing a property. And so it might, if somebody is like kind of on the fence, it might push them over to the edge and say, hey, I'm going to figure this property management stuff out because I could use that extra revenue in my pocket with all of these changes. My hope is that people are smart and they treat it like a business and they price accordingly and the prices go up to cover those fees that were once getting paid by somebody else. All you're doing is passing it on to consumer anyway. It's just, it's taking the fees instead of charging the consumer the fees. You're saying, okay, I'm just going to charge you more on the nightly rate and I'll pay the fees.
So like on the front end, it looks better for the consumer.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have as many fees, but I mean, you're still paying.
You're still paying it.
Right.
Just like everything else.
Right.
You pay it regardless.
Yeah.
You're going to pay it, you know, however you want to do it. If California passes a minimum wage for $25 an hour at McDonald's, guess what? The Happy Meals go up, right?
Yeah.
You're going to pay it one way or the other. So you can, you know, the consumer ends up paying it mm-hmm. one way or the other.
Okay. Now, we talked about when this first came out, like a month ago, we started talking about how you should slowly raise the prices, right? You shouldn't just hike it up to the 15%. You should slowly over the time start to raise it. Say someone hasn't been acknowledged that podcast, or now they're just for the first time hearing about this. Should they just immediately great hike question. It, or should they slowly go up?
That's a great question. Historically, anytime we make price adjustments, we make adjustments 5% increments. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't upset what that is trying to tell me to do. The reason we do that is we want to see where that threshold is with the consumer,
okay.
right? We're saying, okay, does mm-hmm. 5%, they're still booking my property. I can mm-hmm. go up another 10%, they're still booking my property. I go up 15%, they don't book it. Let's say that,
right?
And so we do that because then what I can do is I can go back down to 10 mm-hmm. and I got a 10% increase. If I go from 0 to 15 and they don't book my property, I don't know if I have to drop to 5. I don't know if they have to drop to 10. Where was that line in the sand that they said, I'm not going over that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not crossing there. And so that's why we do that. I would suggest in this scenario, putting that fee right immediately on.
Okay.
So that the price, because in the consumer's mind, mm-hmm. and the consumer front-facing seeing properties and the prices that they're paying mm-hmm. is not changing if you're adding a 15% on the back end. Mm-hmm. They're going to see the same overall price that they're paying for the property.
Okay.
Right? And so in this case, you're not really testing a threshold of where the consumer's threshold is. It's already at $100 a night, right? Or mm-hmm. it's already $115 a night. And we were just charging 100, but they were paying 115. So if I jump at 15% and I'm now at 115, consumer still sees 115. So there's not a threshold there that we're trying to cross. Mm. If I go above what they were seeing, then I would go 5% increments. Mm. But you can make that jump to be equal to what they were seeing right now.
Mm.
And you've already know that they're already booking that property at that price.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense. I love it. Do we miss anything on that? I think that was good.
Yep.
That, right?
Yep.
All right. Let's go into this.
I mean, the asterisk is that I would say anybody listening, raise your prices.
Right.
Don't be the guy that is or the gal that is sitting there and holding on, thinking, well, I don't want to raise that much. And mm-hmm. you're not. Understand mm-hmm. that the consumer is, if just raising that price, that 15% is the same price the consumer's always been paying. And so, you know, if you don't, you're going to be taking a 15% cut on your revenue overall, and you run that out for the year, depending on the property, that's a lot of money.
Mm, I'm going to add, you said something really good. I'm going to add it to this down here. Okay. Let's go into our next topic,
okay,
which is, should you buy a pre-existing short-term rental or start from scratch? Mm. Okay. So clearly the first point I have here is the goals, depending on what you want for this, but I guess the reason I came up with this, my main thought process is, why would somebody ever sell a successful property, right? So I would guess that you would have to buy a, I guess, quote unquote, crappier or a worse property and then just kind of give it a facelift makeover. But with that, I would think there's so many challenges and other things that you would have to do to it, like inspections and make sure, or even if like there's bad carbon, you got to tear all this stuff up now. And it seems more complex, right? Or is this kind of more, no, people do this all the time, and that's a normal way to go.
So one, people do sell successful properties all the time, right? Mm-hmm. It happens on a regular basis that are actually performing well. I'm not talking about great properties that have potential
mm-hmm.
that they didn't realize, and you're going to come in and help that property revitalize it and realize that potential and maybe not doing a lot to it
mm-hmm.
because they just didn't recognize how to market it, how to do a consumer behavior, all those things. There are times, though, when you have and you can walk into a property that's performing really well. And the owner is like, well, why would I sell that? We just sold, Dave and I just closed on Stargazer in St. Mm-hmm. George. We sold that. Great property. Doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Performing. And ultimately, we're looking at it saying, man, we got a lot of equity sitting in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not getting a great return on that equity because we had so much equity sitting there that we're going to trade up to bigger and better properties.
Mm.
And so there's a lot of times when somebody is like, hey, listen, I can recapitalize the money that I have in this property and put it into a bigger and better property and grow it even more, right? And so, and get a better return on my equity. We've talked about this. Any real estate investor should always be looking at the return they're getting on their equity. And there's many times where really good properties sell because that owner is now ready for a bigger and better property, but somebody else might be trading up into the one they're selling, and that is the bigger and better property for that next person. Mm. And it could be really good. Mm. Now, we are coming toward the end of the year. We're in the fourth quarter.
Right.
You know, and we're getting down to crunch time.
Buzzer beater.
Buzzer beater properties, like people trying to slide in on the bonus depreciation and the tax advantage and the short-term rental loophole.
Right.
In certain situations, you're probably at this stage in the game, you better be looking at furnished properties that are ready to go so that you can buy it and get it in service right away. Mm. An existing short-term rental that's furnished, even if you're going to be doing something to it, get it in service, qualify, and then pull it back off, do the renovations or whatever you need to do. Mm. Now, as an investor, the key of an investment is usually you are looking for opportunities, something that is underperforming, something that has some sort of distress, has some sort of a situation that is not ideal, so that you can come in and save that property, right? That you can add some value. You can change it up. Mm. You can come in and say, hey, listen, I need to figure out different marketing. They don't have a great target audience. They don't understand consumer behavior here. They don't have any sort of an experience. They've got this beautiful home. It looks like a model on the beach, great proximity, but they're doing nothing else right. Mm. Those are things that as an investor that we come in and we need to recognize. So you could buy really good properties that are underperforming, not performing well, that still an investor is saying, hey, this is not the game I wanted to play. Right. I'm struggling. I'm not making my payments. I'm not paying my bills. Mm-hmm. This property is not covering itself. Mm-hmm. I don't like short-term rentals, all those different things. And you come in and say, most of the time, as an investor, those are the properties we buy, the ones that aren't doing really well. Mm-hmm. So you're like, okay, well, on one hand, I could buy a really good property. And the question is, well, why would somebody sell a good property? Well, there's reasons. Mm-hmm. There's also reasons why people wouldn't, and there are more obvious reasons why people would not sell a non-performing property. But as an investor, I got to recognize, does that property have potential to perform?
Right.
And many times these properties are furnished and they're set up and they look like model homes and they got everything you need. Right. They've done 95% of the heavy lifting. You need to add that extra 5% on the back end. And usually it's creating an experience, an immersive experience for a target audience.
Right.
But all the hard work's done as far as the case goods, your tables, your chairs, your beds, everything's in place. And it looks like a model home. Now we need to come in and actually not make it look like a model home. We need to make it look like a vacation home.
And
create this immersive experience. Yeah. And so that can be a lot cheaper to do when you buy homes like that, then buy completely unfurnished homes, the ones that now need, any sort of work or you're starting from scratch. And so a lot of times that answer, again, comes down to your budgets and saying, hey, listen, how much money do I have to get this property on the back end to where I need it to be marketed? And usually that's a budget based on a price per square foot. You're going to have a certain price per square foot to take a property from zero to the finish line, and you're going to have another price per square foot to take a property that's pretty well furnished to the finish line. Mm. And those numbers are going to be much different. Mm. And so in that case, you might look in the mirror and say, man, based on the money that I have to acquire this property, to get it to the finish line, I really need to be looking at furnished properties. Mm. Ideally, you want to be able to look at both and you want to be able to look for the best opportunity based on your property goals. But those are some of the reasons why you would lean toward one or the other.
Okay. Let's go a little bit deeper here. Having the confidence of saying this property is underperforming. I see that little mismanagement or whatever's wrong with it, and I can fix that and I can make it perform better. That seems like that requires a lot of confidence, or at least knowing the game pretty well. Would you recommend to a beginner investor to go with that same route, or should someone that has some experience that's maybe done this before, they would more likely go towards the pre-existing?
It's the same skill set.
Okay.
It's recognizing what it's going to take to perform. A beginner that thinks, I'm just going to buy this really nice property, looks like a model home, is going to be in just as much trouble as that person that's selling that model home that is not performing.
Right.
There's a lot of, and I call them model homes out there, that look beautiful. And I call them model homes because they're professionally designed, professionally, like they're great properties, great proximity, beautiful type homes. But they become commodities in this game very, very fast, and they don't perform. And so if you're a beginner and you don't recognize what it's going to take on the back end, and that's recognizing completely set up furnished properties,
right,
as well as properties that you're starting from scratch on, to say, what's it going to take? It's just a matter of having the money. And so absolutely, as a beginner, you better understand that game you're going to be playing and what it's going to take to perform. And if you don't, find somebody that does.
Right.
Obviously, a lot of people are listening to this. You know, we've got tons of resources to help you with that. But at the end of the day, it's the same skill set, right?
Okay.
Recognizing a beautiful model home and why it's not performing sometimes is harder for a beginner to recognize than a property that's sitting there that doesn't look like anything yet.
Okay. We talked about, you know, the buzzer beater time. Would since it's Q4, now we would kind of recommend maybe the pre-existing short-term rental. But if it's Q1, it's the beginning of the year, maybe you have a little bit more time. So maybe you go more towards starting from scratch. Is that kind of where that rule comes? Not maybe a rule necessarily, but that mindset kind of comes in?
Yeah. Well, like I said before, ideally you want to be looking at both.
Okay.
Right?
And okay.
So I'm looking for the best opportunity long-term. And that is going to be a combination of, obviously, once I've chosen my market, right, what's the most investable market for my property goals? But after we choose that, I'm looking for that best property, right? And that has to, it's a combination of proximity, the bedroom, bathroom count, like what can I do with this property to set it up? Like all these different things.
Right.
And ultimately, if I have the budget to go start from scratch, great.
Yeah.
If I, you know, and I'm talking about furnishings, artwork, amenities, accessories, all those types of things.
Right.
We haven't talked about, and I'm not really referring to a lot of big rehab value add properties, right? That's a whole different ballgame.
Okay.
And a different skill set. And so when you start to add that in there, it's nice because you can force some appreciation by buying a fixer upper and putting money in. But what if you don't have the time? You're not doing it. You've never managed one.
Right.
You're far away.
Uh-huh.
It's a whole nother level of complexity added to this deal that can, and a lot of things that can go wrong. And so I don't necessarily recommend a lot of people look for big value add type properties in this situation.
Okay.
So when I say starting from scratch, I'm talking maybe very light rental work, paint, right?
Okay.
Carpet, flooring, stuff like that. Just very cosmetic. But it's, I'm talking about furnishing, setup, like creating that immersive experience.
Right.
And being able to do that is, I'd much rather be able to find the right property long-term, great proximity. And if my budget allows me to take a property from scratch to the finish line, I'd like to have that option when I'm looking for properties. Because what if I find the perfect property, but it's not finished or furnished, and I'm like, oh, I only wanted furnished properties. Well, I have to walk away from that property if I can't get to the finish line, right? And so ideally, you want to be looking at both. Ideally, I'd be looking at both right now, too.
Okay.
But it's just going to be very, very difficult to be able to materially participate, bonus depreciate this year if you haven't started that process.
Okay. All right. Now, I think this is my last question here. People are hearing this and they go, okay, I want to find one. How do I find that property that's maybe underperforming or has that little bit that I think I could save? What's the best way to go about that? Do you need to get a AirDNA subscription and start looking at markets? Do you just hop on Airbnb and try and find a beautiful model property? What's the best route to try and find one of those?
You have to have a strategy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is you're talking about buying a long-term investment. So
you
build that, you figure out what your buy box is, you figure out what are your property goals. We're gonna write those down. What are my budgets? What am I really trying to do with this portfolio? Is it a lifestyle asset? Am I just trying to supplement a vacation home? You're gonna make much different decisions doing that than if, hey, this is an investment, I'm trying to build a portfolio. And we're doing that. So so ultimately, you got to have you need to sit down and figure out what my strategy is, right? These are big buying decisions. They're big decisions long term. You're putting a lot of money into these properties. They're big commitments. And so you don't just go, you know, haphazardly go on, you know, one of your favorite software tools and try to find properties. But I mean, ultimately, you're going to be looking at properties and then you're running numbers on them and you're underwriting them. And you know, you're going to team up with local experts who really know the area that you're investing in. If you're not super familiar with it, maybe you are super familiar with it. You know, the right side of the tracks to be on, the wrong side of the tracks to be on,
right?
All those different things.
Right.
There's so much that goes in to that acquisition side of it to make sure that you're buying the right property for you, right? And that fits your situation, your budgets, the money that you have available. All of those things have to go into consideration. So it's not like you're just going to go in and, I mean, yes, you're going to have an AirDNA subscription. You're going to have a lot. I mean, you're going to be getting on Zillow all the time or Redfin or whatever your favorite search tool is for homes.
Right.
You're going to be plugging numbers in. Mm. All of those things are necessary, but it's a combination of a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And so, I mean, it's one of the most important decisions, buying the right dang property in the right market that works for you.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's really interesting. That was good. Now I'm kind of perking up here because we're moving on to our next point, and I get really excited about this. I want to give you three articles that I found and kind of just give the overarching message here. Let's start with the first one. Marriott Bonvoy. This is their website. They just came out. They surveyed 22,000 people. They came out with a bunch of statistics.
22,000. That's a big survey.
Yes,
a lot
sir.
Of surveys you see are around 1,000 people. That's awesome.
This is the one I really liked. 79% of consumers plan to go on more or the same amount of holidays in 2026 compared to 2025. Yep. That's amazing news. We go up to the hospitality.net or hospitalitynet.org, this amazing article that came out. You can look up the article. Here's the headline. How is the industry's shift toward experience-based booking reshaping hotel revenue strategy? Guests, particularly millennials and Gen Z, are no longer booking the cheapest room or even the best view. They are choosing based on experiences. A wellness package, a chef-led dinner, a sustainable stay, or a curated local adventure that feels uniquely theirs. Last article here. This is from Worldwide Public Relations. They did a huge global study on global vacation homes, 143 plus pages, and it describes all kinds of stuff. This is the sentence I like right here. It projects that the global vacation home market will expand at a compound annual growth rate of 9.10% from 2025 to 2032, from $108 billion in 2025 to $215 billion by 2033. So, I mean, when I hear that stuff, I hear that people are going on more vacations, or at least going on the same, it's not going lower. And when they're going on these vacations, they're not looking for just the cheapest thing. Right. They're looking for more things that you've been preaching since day one, unique, personalized experiences. And this is music to my ears. And then I mentioned earlier in the episode that I wrote a little note down here and we were talking about the Airbnb fee, the 15%. This kind of came to my thought of, say someone, you know, they're hearing this and they go, you know what, I'm not going to raise my prices by the 15%. I'm going to be the one person that holds out, and I'm going to lose a little bit of money on this deal. I would think now that that's actually going to hurt them because people no longer are caring about who has the lowest price. They care about these other things. So even if I would think, now correct me if I'm wrong, even if you decide I'm going to hold out, I'm going to lose the 15%, that hurts you, no?
Yeah.
Drum rolls.
Yeah. So here's the thing. There's consumers all across the board, right? Mm-hmm. There are always consumers that shop for price.
Mm-hmm.
There always will be.
Yeah.
There's always going to be business owners, hosts in our case, uh-huh. that are willing to race to the bottom on price.
Right.
And so we let the bottom feeders be bottom feeders and we let them play in that game,
as a
host that does any of the things that we're talking about,
uh-huh.
you're not going to make any money doing that. And so Dan Kennedy, I've said it before, I'll say it a million times. He said, if you can't make money being the low price leader,
uh-huh.
there's no benefit in being the second low price guy because mm-hmm. the bottom feeders look for the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so so that's always in every market.
Mm-hmm.
They're there, right? Mm-hmm. We also know from consumer behavior, there's study after study after study that consumers will pay more. They want to pay more, but they want to pay for certain things, right? Mm-hmm. The number one thing that consumers pay for is personalized, unique experiences. And that's not just in our space. That's across the board. That's, you know, if you're buying a brand new bike, if it's a unique, personalized bike to you, you're going to pay more than just an off-the-shelf bike that everybody else can have, right? Mm-hmm. You want something customized, that we pay more for custom stuff, right? And so guests or consumers, they will pay more if you give them a reason to pay more. But that's what's really important. Hosts are not doing a good job giving them a reason to pay more. You have to differentiate yourself. You have to be personalized. You have to be unique and different. And that gives the consumer justification to pay more. All these things are saying, mm-hmm. hey, consumers want to pay more. Yeah. They're willing to pay more. Here's what they want. It's our job to give it to them, right? They're telling you what they want, so give it to them. And I know that there's going to be people who are not going to do this price increase. We already know there's people on these. I mean, we see, I've seen multi-million dollar properties. I saw almost a $2 million property renting on Airbnb for $150 a night the other day. I know the market. I know how much those properties are. And I saw this property on there for $150 a night. Are you kidding me? Who in the hell in their right mind is renting a $2 million property for $150 a night? But and it was nice. It was a dang nice property. But they're just a commodity. And so they think in their mind, and this is, we're in a mom and pop type of an industry. And good or bad. And one of the bad parts about that is you have a lot of mom and pop investors that don't study consumer behavior. They don't understand that we're in the hospitality business.
Right.
We're not in the property sales business. We're not trying to sell beautiful properties. And that person that bought that $2 million property is probably scratching their head saying, what in the heck? This is a beautiful property and nobody's staying in it because they're not creating an experience. It's just, it's literally looks like just a bland model home that blends into everything else in that same market. And so the other thing that you showed is that the consumer continues to spend more money every single year. There's a report that I've been doing I speak a lot on stages and I do a lot of live events and live things. Well, I've been showing a study that came out in 2023 showing the projections of the rental growth throughout the years. And they projected 11% year over year growth. Well, we're almost 3 years into that study, 23, 24, 25 now, and we're still sitting at this. This is a different study at 9.10. We're showing that every single year the consumer keeps spending more money. And so we're not super worried. And there's study after study and expert after expert looking at the hospitality world and saying it's probably one of the least affected industries by any looming economic uncertainty and recession out there. And so if that's the case, but on the same note, what is also true is if you look across the board, and we underwrite properties all day, every day, we have a full acquisition department right down the hallway, right? And all we're doing is underwriting properties. And so I can say this with confidence. We understand what people are making on their properties. We can see the revenue back end with a lot of the tools that we have. We also know what properties are selling for in these markets. 80% of the properties, in my estimation, if you bought them today, would not make any money. And so how is it true that the money being spent is more than it's ever been, yet 80% of the properties aren't making any money?
People at the top are making it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody at the it's way weighted at the top, just like every other industry that like this is the top 5 to 10% of the properties are making all the money because they're giving the consumers what they want. And guess what the consumers are willing to do? Say, hey, listen, thanks for listening to us. Here's more money. You know, instead of $150 a night for a $2 million property, I'm going to pay you $2,000 a night for that property. How is that even possible in the same market? It happens all the time in our space. And so what you have to do is say there are going to be people that are going to be priced less than you. And it's your job to not worry so much about that. It's your job to say, hey, listen, I'm going to listen to the consumer. And in our space, the consumer says, I want a unique personalized experience. How am I going to deliver that? And how am I going to differentiate myself from every other property owner out there so the consumer picks my property above everybody else's? And they say, by the way, Sean, I'm happy to pay you more than what your neighbors are charging. And that's what that goes down to, these studies that you're pulling up and these things. It's just reiterating the fact of the fundamentals we've been preaching for how many years now?
Yeah, man. Okay, so my question goes into, I wrote, how do I give it to them, this unique experience, if they're willing to pay for it and I have a struggling property? So let's just go through here. I mean, we have so many episodes on this. Episode 281, how to revitalize your struggling property, right? We scroll up a little bit more here. We have Riches in the Niches, episode 307. If you just scroll through our videos, we have tons of stuff to help you transform your property, give them this experience. Oh man, we have so many things on here. Just go through our episodes. We have tons.
And none of this is easy. Here's the thing. No. The reason that few people do this is because this is hard. It's hard to do. It's hard to make the commitment to do it. But those that do get rewarded very nicely in a game that's pretty fun to play when you're making money. But it's not that fun to play if you're losing money every month. And so if you are listening and you're worried about that, look in the mirror. Look at your property. If you want an audit, send it over to support of odyssey.com. We'll audit your property and I'll give you some feedback. And I'm not going to, I'm always just like very upfront and honest and say, here's what I would do with this property. If it was mine, this is what I'd be doing. So that you know the changes that I would be making and how we would implement what we're talking about.
Episode 251, The Road Less Traveled, building that mindset. If you need a little extra push, there's that one.
There you go.
But that's everything. I think we're almost at 45 minutes. We're at 44. That's it.
Okay. That's it. That's wrapping it up.
Wrapping it.
Okay. Good. Good end. I mean, and great, exciting stuff. Great news on the short-term rental market continues to, it continues to shine. Hospitality, the consumer keeps spending money. And even in economic downturns, we have found that the consumer will continue to travel. They are going to want to escape from the stresses of life, right? Instead of like saying, hey, listen, I'm gonna capitalize on the good times and we're gonna go enjoy our time together. We're gonna say, hey man, I'm getting away from this stress and the anxiety, and we're gonna take a weekend and we're gonna chill out. The other thing is, short-term rentals have given people an economical way to travel. Even though we're talking about, hey, give them a great experience, they'll pay you more, they will. But also, these are properties with full kitchens many times. You can split them with other people. You don't have to go out to eat because of those kitchens. You can stop at Costco. And so the travel experience becomes more economical, right? Usually they're drive to destinations, to major metro areas, two to 4 hours away, and people can go. And so they end up being a nice getaway that actually is fairly economical way to travel versus jumping on and going to a luxury resort on an airplane and doing some of that stuff where you're eating out every night and having to get maybe multiple hotel rooms because your family size or whatever. So short-term rentals have given the consumer, which is why another reason why I think they've exploded, a really fun, economical way to travel as well.
It's opened the door for the average American, I think.
Yeah, you know? To experience a lot of different things that they may not otherwise be able to do because they can split it up with other people.
Yeah. Come on, buy your short-term rental, man. Join Odyssey. That's it. I mean, come on.
That's it. That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do is join Odyssey. Seriously, though, if you're like, hey, listen, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You guys always can, all of our listeners, we tell this all the time, support@odyssey.com, email us in, let us know you're a podcast listener. If you want some help, you want some advice, we'll give you an audit, and we'll do what we can to point you in the right direction. That's our goal at Odyssey, is always to help people walk into this with their eyes wide open. And so that's why we do this a couple times a week, and we appreciate you guys joining us. We know your time is valuable as well. You guys know we don't run ads or sponsorships on the show. You get to listen to us talk the whole time. We don't even edit this stuff out. Do you even edit anything? We just put the front end and the back end, right?
Yeah, that's it.
I like that.
It's authentic, man.
We just have our conversation.
I changed the camera angle, but that's about it, man. Yeah,
awesome. This is and so you guys, we appreciate you spending your time with us. This show grows because you guys share it. The show has been growing a lot lately, and so we appreciate you. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on, and then those platforms share it to other people like you. And so those things all help us and we appreciate it. And the final most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Odyssey.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.